Now it is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker, so let's please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Sarah.
Hey everybody, my name's Sarah and I'm an alcoholic. Wow, it's really an honor to be here tonight. If you ask me where I thought I would be at 23, an alcoholic, yeah, I might have entertained that idea, but a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous getting the privilege of spreading the message to other people is definitely not something I would have ever considered, but now that this is something that I have in my life, I'm very grateful. So my sobriety date is September 4th, 2016, thank you. But, you know, I've been in the meetings and in the rooms all my life. My mom is also an alcoholic and a couple other family members. So I've always known about AA and grew up going to the Halloween dances and doing all sorts of that. I grew up in Seattle, Washington. I was born and raised there. And I moved to the Valley in March 2016. Anyway, tracking back just a little bit. Yeah, my mother was an alcoholic, so I grew up knowing that there was a chance that I could be, but I thought that if I got really good grades, did really good in school, just kind of kept myself busy, that I would be able to escape that. So that's what I did. And so my mom was in and out of treatment pretty much my whole life as a kid, AA meetings, all that. And then when I was 15, my parents split up and my dad got full custody, so I was no longer around her and in that environment. And so things got even better from there. My grades went up and went to community college. Still never really drinking. I never had that mindset of, oh, I'm never going to touch alcohol because my mom's an alcoholic and I don't want to be like that. I never had that mindset. I always kind of had the mindset, I guess, however naive it was, that like, oh, if I ever drink, I'll be careful. I'll be careful about it. My first drunk was New Year's Eve when I was 17. My dad was in Minnesota caring for his father at the time, and my stepmom bought me a bottle of pink champagne all to myself for the night, and I was really excited. You know, dad's out of town. My stepmom was pretty laid back, and so I was really looking forward to it. I drank the whole thing by myself, wouldn't let anybody else try it, and got the spins. I didn't get sick or anything. I just got the spins, barely made it to midnight. I think I had downed the whole bottle in maybe half an hour, and went to bed. And woke up the next morning, had a headache, but that was about it. That was it in terms of the drinking for a little while. I was going to school, working. I got married really young. I was 20 when I got married, and he was in the military, so we were doing a lot of moving around, and I thought, you know, thinking back, I thought, oh, I made it. Like, I'm not drinking all the time like my mom, and I'm not unable to hold a job, and I have a husband and a house, and so I made it. Yay, I'm not an alcoholic. But then things started changing for me. I was living in North Carolina at Camp Lejeune, and basically just working a part-time job there, had a lot of time spent alone at my house by myself because my husband was either in the field training or deployed. So I started drinking with the other military wives. That's what we did was, oh, well, what is there to do in Jacksonville, North Carolina, which is probably half the size of Visalia? So we drank, and it was never for me because I didn't feel out of place or like I didn't fit in. It was just because I remembered how much fun I had that New Year's Eve, and I wanted to keep the party going. And so that's what we would do. It didn't matter what night of the week it was. It was usually at my house because the other wives lived in on-base housing, and we owned a house off-base. So you could get a little bit crazier when you're off-base. And, you know, it was just, it was not uncommon to go through 5, 6, 7 36 pack beers at my house in a single night. Not uncommon to have to go out and buy more liquor. I was always into beer rather than hard liquor, just because for me it was just personal preference, I guess. But then, you know, everybody, military life, everybody moves away, they get deployed, they get out of the military, they move back to their home states, and my ex-husband, it was time for him to go on a long deployment, so he was going to be getting out shortly after. So I decided to move to his hometown, which is Exeter, so that's how I ended up here in the Valley, so that way I could get to know his family better. I'd only met them the day before the wedding. Yeah, I don't recommend that. And so I decided I'm going to move in with these people I've met once, and in this tiny town. So I moved out here in March, and immediately got a job when I got out here. I am a paralegal, so I was able to get into a law firm here and have that Monday through Friday 8-to-5 job. But one of the things that comes with that field is every attorney had a full bar in their office where I worked. And after 5 o'clock, you could drink whatever you wanted, however much you wanted. No questions asked. It was always full. So that's where my drinking really took off, was when I moved out here, because even though I was drinking back in North Carolina, it wasn't a nightly thing. It was usually just a one weekend a month girls get together, and that was that. But then the drinking was because it was fun, and it was something fun to do, and it wasn't until I started drinking here that it changed into something I needed. It turned into something. The law firm I worked at was very stressful, and I realized, hey, drinking alcohol, it made things fun. It made me feel better. It made me happy. It put me in a good mood. I didn't think about anything that was going on outside of the drinks. So I figured, well, I'll just do that then. So I started. I didn't drink at the attorney's bars after I got off work, because I still had to drive home, and I couldn't drink like I wanted to drink there, because I still had to drive home. So instead of having 2 beers and getting really mad that I couldn't drink anymore because I had to drive to Exeter, I would just save it and then stop by the store on my way home, buy an 18-pack, and get home and then polish that off. So that would start when it was just the hard days, and then it just progressed really quickly from there. It went from once or twice a week to every single night. I kept telling myself, like, hey, tonight I'm not going to drink. I don't need to. Today was a good day. And then just like autopilot, I would find myself pulling into the grocery store, walking in there, and, you know, something you look back on when you drink, you realize, like, something you were really proud of during your drinking, but you look back, you're like, that's actually really sad, was when Save Mart no longer carded me when I came in to buy alcohol. I was really proud of that. I was like, I came home, I looked at my mother-in-law, I'm like, they finally stopped asking for my ID. Yes, like a badge of honor. And then now I'm like, that's really sad if I'm buying alcohol that much, that somebody who is like 22 is not getting carded. And so then it turned into an everyday thing, because my life was get up, go to work, come home, drink. I didn't know anybody here. I had no friends. I didn't go out to the bars, so I didn't have a chance to really meet anybody. So my life was just coming home and drinking, and I eventually progressed to the point where I wouldn't eat all day, so that way I could get drunk faster when I got home. I view that as economical, because then I wasn't spending money on food, I wasn't taking as much to get me drunk, and then also I was thinking, well, I'm drinking beer anyway, I don't want to put on too much weight, so if I don't eat, then I don't have to worry about it, and beer, that's pretty carby, that counts as dinner, right? And so that's what I did. I got fired from that job at the law firm because they said that I was not working up to expectations, and I just thought, oh, well, they don't know what they're talking about, like, they're really awful people anyway, so whatever. I didn't think it was the fact that I was showing up hungover every single day and, like, going through withdrawals at my desk by lunchtime, but that's another story. So anyway, I, you know, just kept, got another job right after, and just kept working and drinking and working and drinking, and right around July, right around the time my 22nd birthday came around, I started kind of realizing just how far it had progressed in just those few short months, 4 months. I had gone from getting blackout drunk a handful of times to every single night I did not remember how much I drank. I didn't remember what time I went to bed, anything. So I started wondering, okay, you know, I'm really drinking a lot. I'm not able to stop. Am I an alcoholic or am I just drinking normally for a 22-year-old? Which is it going to be? And I was really hoping I was drinking normally for a 22-year-old. And so I go to my other 22-year-old friends for advice. Hey, am I drinking too much? No, 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 you're totally fine. You're great. Live it up. And then, so that's how I did until about August. And then I really started getting sick. Instead of getting drunk, I was still drinking the same amount, but rather than getting drunk, I would just immediately throw it back up. I wasn't able to keep anything down. Even when I wanted to eat, I couldn't. I couldn't keep anything down. I started feeling full all the time. After talking with my doctor, I was at the beginning stages of kidney failure. It was just a really, my body was starting to shut down on me. So then I realized, yeah, you know what, I am an alcoholic. I really do think that this is the road that I'm going down. And so then I decided, you know what, well, that's just the way my life is going to be. I'm not going to get sober. I'm just going to ride this crazy train as long as it'll take me. And so that's what I did until September. And September 4th, my God-given sobriety date, I didn't wake up one morning and be like, hey, I'm going to be sober starting today. It was Labor Day weekend, and so I went and had the whole weekend off from work, so day drinking, and that's what I did. That was my plan. I ended up going to a party next door, and just it went to all new out-of-control levels, whereas before I was only drinking at home by myself. I went into this party, and then my old alcoholic behaviors of trying to keep up with the boys, basically if anybody egged me on and passed me a shot and said, do it, I'd be like, no problem, and I'll do it better than you, and then do it. And then usually end up throwing it up right after, being the first one passed out. But I went to this party and ended up being there until 4 in the morning. Did a whole bunch of tequila shots, just didn't remember the night before, I woke up in my own bed, no idea how I got there, which for me was a different experience because before usually waking up in my bed, like I knew I had passed out there, but this time I was somewhere else other than my house and woke up in my bed and had no idea how I got there. And also just really sick, again, just still sick. And so that's when I realized that I couldn't keep doing this to myself. I was just so sick. I couldn't get out of bed for 2 days. That was the first time that the hangover had actually hit me that hard. It wasn't even like I was able to drink it off or anything like that. I was just stuck. So I remembered the AA meetings that my mom and I went to when I was a kid. And I thought, oh, well, I wonder if Alcoholics Anonymous, like, if they have anything like that here. And so I looked it up, and sure enough, I found the meeting directory. And I went to the Breath of Fresh Air meeting that following Thursday. And it was full of a bunch of old white men. And old enough to be my grandpa, there was maybe, like, 4 of them, and that was it. And but then... Love you, Gary. But then I realized, you know, they started talking, and one of them started reading, said, you don't ever have to drink again if you don't want to. And I just started bawling because I hadn't wanted to drink for months. I kept drinking for months, but all I wanted to do was stop. I was so sick of being sick. I was sick of losing job after job, coming from somebody who, you know, had never lost a job before. And I was sick of having to call my dad and telling him, Dad, look, I lost another one. And I was sick of, you know, when my parents split up, my mom used to drunk call my dad a lot. Almost every night she would call him and just leave him horrible, awful messages, calling him all these names. And I was doing the same thing by the time I got sober. I was calling him drunk, and I wasn't calling him names, but just knowing that I was putting him through the same thing that my mom put him through, it just killed me. And I couldn't take it anymore. So when that guy to me said, "You don't ever have to drink again if you don't want to," my first thought was, "Okay, how? Please tell me." And my next thought was that I found, like, I had finally found my home. Like, I found people that had the same issue I had and were able to be sober. And, you know, I didn't have to worry about drinking anymore as long as I did what these people told me. And so I went to that meeting, and then the next day I went to another one, and the next day I went to Soberfest and spent all day doing the workshop there. And I still, you know, surprisingly, the cravings for me to drink again didn't hit until about month 6 or 7. I just think that I was so focused on my recovery. Within that first 3 months, I got a sponsor, but it just didn't work out. Her work schedule changed, and so I kept going to meetings, though, and I got put in as a secretary, so I had to show up, even though I didn't really feel like it. And that's one thing AA definitely taught me, was how to suit up and show up. Before, I was definitely the type of person that would make plans and then cancel the day of, like, "Oh, so sorry. Like, can't make it. Something came up. I have to work late. I thought you were off today. Oh, we have trial tomorrow. It's Friday. Oh, well, we have trial on Monday, and I have to go in to do overtime." Like, I just never followed through with anything ever. But being in this program definitely taught me to follow through, and that whatever I commit to, I have to show up. And that's what has really helped me, you know, in those first 3 months. That's tools that I use now today, even not in my sobriety, but in my everyday life. Whereas before, I was the person that would call in sick to work to go hang out with my friends, or to sleep in all day, or do whatever. But now I've been at my current job for a year, and I had to call in sick yesterday and today because I've had the flu. But but again, you know, I didn't call out for some crappy reason. And so those were some first skills that I learned, and I hadn't started my steps yet, but people kept talking about them, and I kept wanting to do them. But, you know, whatever, I got a second sponsor, and that didn't work out either. I ended up going sponsorless for about 4 or 5 months, and then once I hit my 6 months of sobriety, I met the sponsor that I have now. And that is when I started the steps for real this time. And you know, I started step one, and by then I had realized, like, yeah, I am an alcoholic for sure. But the amount of writing I had to do was crazy, and it's really amazing how much the steps make you realize things about yourself that you didn't realize before. Maybe you don't always want to realize these character, like, they call them character defects, and maybe you don't always want to realize those things about yourself, and it might be really hard to see those things on paper and be like, "Oh, wow, yeah, I definitely gossip, and, like, I definitely get jealous." And but the great thing is, like, once you draw attention to them and you put them on paper, you can begin working on fixing them so you're not like that anymore. And that was the biggest relief for me that came with through my step work, was realizing my character defects. My sponsor had me do my 4th step, and that was all well and good until I got to the fears inventory. The fears inventory was the hardest part for me, because when she said fears inventory, I thought you meant, like, oh, scared of heights and scared of spiders. And then, no, that's not it at all. So she actually had to send me a list of all these different fears so I would actually be able to grasp the idea of what these fears were. And then my fears list was, like, 3 pages long. And, yeah, that was the period that was really hard for me, and I couldn't wait to be done with it, because I always had thought that I was, you know, this rock-hard person that wasn't afraid of nothing. But then I realized that, no, I do have a lot of fears. And after, it was really nice to get them on paper, because then I could figure out how to, you know, okay, I'm scared of losing my job. Well, let's create an action plan for what happens if I lose my job, so that way I don't have to be scared of if I do. That was something that was really helpful for me. And then working on my character defects, you know, I was always the type of person that just, when during interviews or job applications, when they ask, like, what would you say is your greatest weakness? Like, I don't know. And then you'd Google, like, how do you answer on a job application? What is your greatest weakness? That was me. And then I was actually able to answer that. And the greatest thing is being able to work on it, because even though you're drawing attention to it, it's not like, oh, you're stuck with these character defects forever and you're always going to be this person that has all these crappy characteristics. Like, no, it doesn't work that way. You get to actually make them better, and you get to actually make yourself a better person and be held accountable and basically become the person that you always wanted to be. If you look at your defects and you set aside their opposites, you'll be able to become those opposites, and then your life will get a whole lot better. And so that's where I have been now, is working on, I just finished up step 8, and now I'm on step 9 for making my amends. And I know that one is probably one of the harder ones from what I've heard, but I'm definitely looking forward to it. You know, she's having me write letters, and being able to get it out on paper is something that's really great. And being able to go back to these people, and because I've never taken responsibility for my actions ever, I've always found somebody else to blame, some situation to blame, some excuse for why I did the things that I did. And now I can't do that anymore. And I actually have to be the one to say, hey, look, I'm the one that screwed up. I'm the one that did you wrong. I should have done this and I didn't, and I'm sorry. And the fact that now when I get to go take responsibility, because usually these people that I'm going to be making amends to would just think, like, oh, okay, what excuse is she coming up with now? You know, what, I wonder if she's used this one before. But now I actually get to say, hey, look, I messed up and I'm sorry. And you know, I've heard from a lot of different people, my sponsor, other friends in the program, that once you do that, people actually come around a lot better than what you think they might. Like, you might think that, oh, they're going to hate you forever and, you know, think you're a horrible person, but they don't. And they're actually, some of them don't even remember what it is that you did. They're like, why? What are you talking about? What'd you say? Like, I don't even remember that, but okay. And, you know, so that's where I'm at, step 9. And looking back, I'm really grateful for this program, because it's given me the ability to hold a job for longer than 3 months. It's given me the ability to learn how to be independent and not depend on a substance for making me happy or helping me get through a hard day at work or helping me have more fun in a social event. And that feels really good. It feels really good to be able to go out with friends and not have to worry about how I'm going to get home, because I'm not going to be able to drink as much as I want to drink. And I'm just really grateful for that. I'm really hoping that, you know, to the newcomers here, that you hear something that has worked really well for you, or, you know, that you get a sponsor, and that definitely get a sponsor, work the steps. Don't wait until 6 months to work your steps like I did, because you'll be running around like a chicken with your head cut off. You won't know how to deal with anything. I know I'm not going as long as I'm supposed to, but I'm just really happy to be here. I'm really glad that this program is here and that it works, and that we're able to show people that it works, and that we have people in this room of all different ages that are sober. I'm glad that we all get to show people that there's no right or wrong age to get sober, and that there is no such thing as too young to get sober, because if you have a problem, you have a problem. It doesn't matter what age you are. And I think that is something that is really, really important for people to hear. You know, I just, again, working steps, getting a sponsor, getting involved in the service work, definite service work. I got appointed as secretary when I had 60 days, and I've held a secretary position ever since, up until this last week, and that is definitely what has helped carry me through to the past year of sobriety, is having to show up. I've secretaried meetings on Christmas Day, New Year's Day, Thanksgiving, days where you really would not want to do anything except for sit at home with your family, but you have to keep the doors open so that other people can get the message. And hearing people tell you, like, hey, we're thankful that you're here today, we're thankful that you're here, it really helps, because you never know if a newcomer might come into that meeting that needs to hear the message, and maybe you saved a life that night, who knows. Even little service positions like literature, coffee maker, anything you can get your hands on to get you more involved in the program is great, because then you'll meet people, you'll expand your circles, you'll get to know all sorts of people from all different backgrounds, and you'll get to hear your story multiple times. You know, if I remember hearing my story and just thinking, wow, I thought nobody would have the same story I did, or I thought that I was just so horrible and so different from everybody else. There's no way that somebody could be like me and have gotten sober and be living sober. But, you know, through the service positions, going to meetings, I was able to find multiple people that had the same story as me. And, you know, able to find people that have the same sobriety date as you or close to it, so that you guys can celebrate together. And that is what's made all the difference, too. If you're, we define young people as anyone with room to grow. So, you know, with our young people meetings here, trying to be really involved with that, it has been a big part of my recovery. That's how I met my sponsor. And, you know, it's just, it's really, I'm glad I could be here tonight. And I'm glad that I could share a little bit of my experience, strength, and hope. So with that, I will keep coming back.
If anyone has any questions for Sarah, go ahead and raise your hand and she'll call on you.
I am not sponsoring yet, no. But I would be open to it, yes. Yeah. I'm sorry? No, I love working for attorneys. I really do. I really love my job, but I would never want to be one because I see how much stress they're under a daily basis. Actually, one of the jokes that my coworkers and I have when people ask, you know, what's the difference between a paralegal and a lawyer, because it is something we ask a lot, is paralegals still have their souls. And so, yeah.
Did you come from a spiritual background?
Not really. I did not. That is something I should have touched more on. My parents weren't really religious. I went to Catholic church with my grandparents once a year for Catholic Mass on Christmas Eve, but that was about the extent of it. And then I became, in my teenager years, that atheist teenager. But then in this program, I was actually able to find a higher power. It was something I was too busy to do for the rest of my life previously, is I was too busy to go to church, too busy to think about the concept of a higher power. But once I got into this program and I saw how much it was mentioned, I was able to actually make some time for that, and I'm really glad that I did. My sponsor is very big on conscious contact with God and praying, even if you don't know what you're praying to. That was one of the big things she had me do, was, you know, just pray in your car on the way to work, even if you don't know what you're praying to, even if you have to be like, I don't know if you're up there, I don't know if you're listening, but here's what I'm going through. And that's what made a big difference for me, was being able to just kind of fake it till you make it with that, because eventually I was able to make it by faking it. So, yeah. Jody.
I was interested if
my mom is not sober. My mom still struggles with her disease. She's been in and out of the room since she was 16. And I believe she's doing really well right now. I think she is sober right now. How long it's going to last, I don't know. I don't really. We went to a meeting together, actually, when I was visiting Seattle over the summer, and that was the first time I ever heard her call herself an alcoholic, where she wasn't being grilled by somebody else to just go out and admit it. A lot of the time she was just like, I'm an alcoholic, just to get people off her back. But at the meeting, that was the first time I ever actually heard her admit it. So we're making progress with that, hopefully. And hopefully by seeing me recover, I think it has made a big difference for her, too. So, yeah. Jennifer.
Hi, Sarah. Jennifer, I'm calling. Thanks for your share. Did you ever have any trouble when you lost a job and you gained another job? And how did you explain what happened, previous job, and was it hard for you to get another job? I'm looking, so
yeah.
I'm worried about that.
You know, for me, it wasn't. I just, you know, a lot of the places, I just worked there for such a short time that I didn't even bother putting it on my resume. and so that came in handy. But also, I just usually would use stuff like, oh, change in workplace environment or downsizing. Downsizing is a good one. Yeah. But, yeah, I met my first... You know, ironically, this job I have now is the first job I've ever had after being sober and clear-headed, and it's the one I've been able to keep the longest, so. I don't know. But that would be my big piece of advice. Yeah. I'm sorry? I do not have any children, no. After the meeting, we can talk.
I have a question.
Yeah.
I have an attorney that's not doing his job.
After the meeting.
Okay.
Bill?
I have a question.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Hey, quiet down, you guys. Do you have a question?
I hear a lot about resentment. What do you do when you have resentment?
Well, that's my sponsor, everybody. When I have a resentment, I definitely... I know that if I don't take care of it and address it right away, I might drink over it later, because I'm definitely one of those people that would be like, oh, this person cut me off, I'm going to drink over that later, or like not get mad during the day because I fear I'm just going to drink about it later, so whatever. But now I don't have that option, so I actually have to deal with stuff as they come up, which is really hard. But a lot of times I've noticed, you know, when I have a resentment, I really have to think about my part in it and realize what's, you know, if I'm having a problem with it, it's probably an issue with my attitude and the way I'm handling this situation, not them. And so I have to look at, you know, what character defects are coming out right now. What's the opposite of that? What should I do instead? I pray about it. I consult my sponsor about it. And, you know, just try to do the right thing, even if it sucks and it's super hard and I really don't want to. I still have to, because if I don't, I might drink again, and that's definitely a risk I don't want to take, especially over some stupid resentment that could get taken care of in 10 minutes of writing and 5 minutes of praying. So,
yeah. I heard you say that around, I think, like 6 months, that you got a little disheartened and, mm-hmm. Is that something that still applies to you today?
No, I went to a wedding, and that was really what kind of was my moment of craving and crying. And, you know, I called, it was my boyfriend's sister's wedding, and everything was going great all day long, didn't bother me at all, was doing great. And I was just standing there watching his kids, and I look over, and on this barrel next to me, it was like 4 shots of whiskey just lined up. And I'm like, jokingly turned to my boyfriend, I'm like, haha, who would just leave 4 shots of whiskey, not just leave it there? Well, then that quickly like devolved into crying, like, who would just leave 4 shots of whiskey? And then ended up with me like going behind a tractor and calling my sponsor, bawling, because I just, why can't I be like everybody else? Everybody at this wedding was in my age group, and they were all drinking and having fun out on the dance floor, and here I am crying behind a tractor because I can't drink like everybody else. Yeah, that was the really hard moment for me, and I still get kind of squirrely around weddings. I've been to two since then. But yeah, it was definitely, it was my moment where if I didn't have the strong support group that I have, like my sponsor, I called my sponsor. There were a couple other women in the program that I called, and because of that, I was able to stay sober. But it was really hard at first. It was really hard to be at my first event, like not AA event, where there was alcohol being served, where there were people in my age group just going crazy, like exactly how I would be doing if I were still drinking. I just had to keep reminding myself, okay, well, here's the thing, is these people are only doing this one time. This might be their first time out in like a couple months. You would be doing this every night. You would be the one falling down, making an idiot of yourself at your boyfriend's sister's wedding. Like, you would be the one with your head in the trash can, having to be like escorted off the property. It just wasn't going to end well. So I had to keep reminding myself through the tears behind the tractor about all that. So
going through that experience, mm-hmm. I realized that there was people out there
right, yeah, and definitely like getting phone numbers of women in the program, if you're a woman, men in the program, if you're a man, so you can call them, and because they know what you're going through. My sponsor had been through the exact same thing. Other women I talked to have been through the exact same thing, and being able to hear that they made it through gave me the strength to make it through, and being able to just like call and just let it all out on somebody who understands, because you can't. If you're an alcoholic and you're crying to somebody who might be like a normie about like, why can't I just drink? Why can't I just be like everybody else? I just want to drink. They'd be like, well, do it. But you can't. And so by talking to another sober alcoholic, they can be the ones to talk you down from crazy and get you calm enough so that you can remember what it would be like if you were to drink, and to play that tape through and see where your night would end if you were to drink like you want to, but you can't. So.
Did you have anything else you wanted to ask?
Yes, H&I, that pink can that we pass around that goes to buy literature for people in hospitals and institutions, has also been a pretty big part in my recovery. Like I said, I'm not sponsoring right now, but the biggest part of this program is you have to give it away in order to keep it. And so a great way to give it away, what this program has given you, is through H&I work and being able to go out to jails and prisons and hospitals and recovery homes and speak about your experience and your strength and your hope, and show people that can't go out to meetings kind of what the program is all about, because not everybody can leave the recovery home they're at. Obviously, they can't let people out of jail to go to meetings. So being able to bring that to them is a really great way to help carry the message, regardless of if you're able to sponsor or not. It still gives you the ability to get that message out there. And it's a really great feeling. Like, it almost does more for me, I feel like, to be able to go and speak about my experience and strength with these people than it does for them. I mean, it does. It's just so beneficial for both parties that I would highly recommend that if anybody has a chance to do H&I work, to volunteer your time. It doesn't take much. Bill here has a whole bunch of information about it, too. So you can see either one of us after the meeting, too, if that's something. But that has been so big, is being able to talk to other people and help other people so soon after getting help myself. So I know that I have to give it away in order to keep it. That's something I've been hearing since day one, and that is something that we have to keep doing. That's why this program has been around since before Christ was born. I mean, we have to keep giving it away. So thank you. All right, well, thank you guys for having me. It's been awesome.
Thank you, Jen.
All right. Well,